This is Talkin' Schmidt, and I'm Cairo Foster, and I am super excited to talk with you, Greg.
Hey.
Talkin' Schmidt.
I'm already not watching.
It's cool, like, tonight is the night.
Damn, this is, like, the coolest thing I'm ever gonna do.
I wouldn't say it was fun.
What do you mean? Well, Christian Fletcher's younger brother.
Fuck the Dodgers.
Oh, big dog's in. What do you think, Dolan?
John? Schmidt?
Talkin' Schmidt.
Alpha Macaroni.
Most of these guys, their opinion don't matter.
Talkin' Schmidt, right?
It's skateboarding.
I remember that.
Talkin' Schmidt.
What are Yuns doing?
Holy shit.
Skateboarding homies.
No, Schmidt, you can't jump in.
What is happening?
I'm here for Greg Smith. Yay!
Gregory.
Yes, we are.
Wi-Fi check one, Wi-Fi check two.
Fuck yeah, guys. Look at this. My next guest has been on my radar since 1996, and I've wanted him on the show since I started, but obviously I'm going to be a little cheesy right now. He's been occupied with what other persons are occupied with and vice versa. You know what I'm talking about. This is the one and only Cairo Foster. What's up, Cairo?
Chilling, man. Chilling. Stoked to connect with you.
Dude, I don't know if we ever talked about this like formerly or anything actually, but so the story goes that Paul Zawanich called me one night and he's like, hey, Fausto wants you to do the next Thrasher video. Can you do it? And I'm like, I mean, my computer, I don't know, dude. I mean, I'm down, but, and he's like, dude, we'll just fix up your computer. We'll do it. So I'm like, okay. So him and Sattva show up at my house and we edit raw. Safa's got this footage of this dude with glasses I've never seen skate before, just killing Pier 7 and like a lot of shit. And we're like, what the fuck? That was you.
With all the, yeah, with some.
So like, it's kind of crazy to me, like, cause I was thinking about it as I was getting ready to talk to you. And I was like, man, that was my first, like, that was my, the door opened enough to get me into the whatever I'm doing and what I've done since then. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of your opening too. Like you had moved to SF and filmed a bunch of stuff with Sattva and that kind of put you on radar in a way, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's so funny because whenever I do reflect back on the doors that open and everything, I'm like, Sattva just like was in tune, because through Sattva, I also got on to Supernaut because of Paul Sharp,
right?
And those guys were all within the same camp because of the Toy Machine days and all that stuff, because Paul was on Foundation. And yeah, but yeah, in 96, that's when I like finally really moved to the Bay Area, because I'd gone back and forth from Jacksonville, Florida, like two or three times. Jacksonville and like Salt Lake City, like two or three times. But yeah, that time it stuck. Yeah, that time it stuck. I was like, I think I crashed at like Josh Rosenthal's house for a little bit, and Josh B, which Josh B was like a DJ, like he's a skater first and foremost, but like he was DJing a lot, and Sattva was getting into DJing and like skating with Sattva. And then, I mean, Sattva's like this conduit to all these amazing times in the beginning of the SF days. Cause then I also immediately thought of like in Slap Magazine, he had like a checkout and I had a checkout on the opposite side.
Oh, sick.
So, yeah, it was a good alignment. And yeah, I mean, some random Floridian dude with huge glasses and a bunch of thrift store clothing, like tight t-shirts up top with some baggy, like, are those your grandpa's pants? I mean, I think that was post the Goofy Boy pants era, but
yeah,
like me, like a couple years post. Yeah. That was good.
How did you end up meeting Sattva?
Just skating around the city. Like I moved out with this guy, JW, who I skated a lot with and lived with in Florida. And this other guy, I might be mixing it up because like I lived in SF a couple of different times before it really stuck. But like one of the first times was with JW and this guy, Al Mosley, who was from St. Augustine, Florida.
Mm.
Yeah, that was like when we lived there. Before that, going to SF was like with this dude, Jeff Davis and Bear Hughes and Brian Childers. And that's when I met Carl Watson. We went to, yeah, I'm like all over the place. I'm just laughing because like that first trip, I remember it was the first trip or maybe the second time when I was staying with Josh Rosenthal and JW. But I remember we went to EMB and I think it might've been Josh. He had that at EMB experience where someone came up to him, was like, yo, let me try out your board, and just took it.
Peace.
And then basically JW has the gift of the gab and was able to like chop it up with whoever had swiped Josh's board and got it back for him. But it was like, yeah. But yeah, I think just skating around, like the intention to moving to San Francisco was just getting out of Florida to skate in a place that like was super rad. It wasn't even like, let's go there to get sponsored or anything. It was like, oh my gosh, let's go skate San Francisco. All the videos that we really liked, obviously back then, like all the videos were based out of California. Mm. And then the other thinking was just San Francisco geographically was more appealing. And then you also didn't need a car.
Yeah. It's only 7 square miles. So you can get a lot of places. Was EMB a big part of it or not so much?
It was kind of like done. I feel like by that time, I feel like Carol had moved away, and not to say like Carol was like the one person that made got everyone to skate at EMB. But I feel like at that time when a lot of those heads had moved to Los Angeles or SoCal, it was kind of those last days of EMB and you were getting kicked out of every session. And yeah, Pier 7 had been built and I feel like everyone was like, had moved over there because it was easier to skate there. And who knows when Third and Army, I don't even know what year that happened, maybe 97 or 98, but like, or maybe it was 96. I don't know. Just like there were other options and it was a hassle to skate EMB. And hats off to everyone who did skate EMB in those days with like 45 millimeter wheels because.
And the bricks.
Yeah. I'm just like, nowadays you watch footage of people skating there and I'm like, yeah, you have 55 to 60 millimeter wheels. That's so much easier to skate. There are like 3 decades have gone by and the cracks might be more vicious, but
That's crazy. Yeah, I know. I think about that too. When you were filming with Sattva, were you ever apart? Because at that same time, Sattva was finishing up the Welcome to Hell video, Toy Machine, which was like one of the, I mean, we all know that video. So were you apart? Was like, hey, Muska's in town or Jamie's in town? Like, did you get in on any sessions or like that?
No, I kicked it with Sattva. Pretty sure like shortly after, maybe even at the same time, that's when I met Dan Libby.
Oh yeah.
And that was kind of like the squad. I would skate with Dan and he had connections with people from like Louisville and Chicago. Like, and I'm definitely mixing up at what time the sessions happened, but like Tony Cox and Chip Van Ham, like I just recently spoke to Dan Libby about those days and like, Chris Becker was in the mix after that. Rob Collins, like all the people from our house. And then like with Sattva, it was like skating with Sattva and Josh B. And then like Brandon, I forgot Brandon's last name. And then like a lot of, it's all kind of a blur because it's so long ago. But yeah, like I never was like on any like heavy Muska sessions. Like I think any Muska session was like earlier when my first trip to California, like in 94 or 95 with Bear and Jeff and Childers, like being down in like Huntington Beach, like the OG Huntington Beach, like seeing Tom Penny skate or like Muska or hearing stories of them talking, like the mega heyday when you didn't know that it was possible to be that smooth on a skateboard.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like Sattva was filming for that. And like definite highlight was to have I had a guest trick in the montage. And like, I'm like the closest thing to me being involved with Welcome to Hell. I never was on like a session. Like, I don't think I got in like sessions with Jamie Thomas till like way later.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh,
so and Sava is like, he was the key. He opened up the door for me. And he's just got this, you're aware of it, like being on the other side of the camera, and like there's an art form to pulling out whatever someone's capable of doing on any given day. And Sava is just so good at that. Like I've been to, when I was still working for NHS, going to Waller Street and seeing Sattva, and I'm like, he still has that same personality, that energy, and like that smile and excitement. So like, you're just like, yeah, let me just try it. Like Sattva's going to film it. And I always love that he's always filming. Like when he does film on his phone, he's films horizontally because he's like old school. I'm like, it's holding true to me. He's like, yeah, we're not going to play it on a phone. That should be on YouTube. We're not talking about a YouTube short. So I'm like, fine. That's awesome. I love it. But he hooked it up, and I think he eventually, he like shared that a lot of that footage to Paul Sharp.
Uh-huh. Like you said, in Florida, you were watching videos that, you know, were mostly in California. Who were the parts that you were attracted to? Who were some of like your iconic skaters you were looking up to as kind of heroes back then?
So funny. Like the short answer is Mike and Rick. Huh. And then the long answer is that like for years and years, I just held on to this belief that I didn't have any skaters that I idolized or like were my heroes or anything. And even when I had the opportunity to meet Mike and everything, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, like there's like inner child that's just like, oh, this is cool. And then I remember years and years later on I went on like a cross country trip with like Childers, Chet Childress, Rob Welsh, and Pete Thompson and Jake Rupp. And like we went cross country and we ended up going up to DC. I think it was on this trip. Maybe it was on a real trip, but like, I saw Chris Hall, and it's funny because like Rick and Mike, now I can say now I'm like I just watched that the Bob Shirt video with those dudes, and I watched it from beginning to end. Like I was like studying it because like I'm like, yeah, I'm now I'm like, yeah, I idolize those dudes. But back then I was just like, yeah, cool. When I saw Chris Hall, I like almost lost my shit, and I was like the first person or probably the only skater where I was like, oh, I want to get their autograph. And I just didn't. And then over time, I'm like, I just feel like super blessed that my skateboarding time and career has like been able to like if there are Venn diagrams, like my bubble, like crossed over paths with Mike and Rick so that like we're friends and like,
yeah,
and buddies and all that stuff. So like, it's funny. Yeah. Like that's the long answer, but yes, Rick and Mike, like those video parts, was it Shackle Me Not when like Mike does the back lip and then he does a back lip on the fun box and it's got a little QP jump ramp at the edge and he's like popped up. It's like him and his brother skating, him and Greg.
Yeah.
Even seeing that, I'm like, damn. And then, not Debbie does Blockhead. Maybe Splendid Eye Torture was Rick and Splendid Eye Torture?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Like those guys stood out to me. Definitely some other people stood out, but like, it's also what they skated, like the terrain that they skated. I'm just like, Mike and Rick are very well-rounded skaters, but they didn't go down the path of being like so tech that it just was incomprehensible or so far that it was incomprehensible. They've just always been like a great balance. Like you watch all these videos and Mike can obviously do anything and everything. Or maybe he was just like so tech, but it didn't look like melting. You're just like, oh, like when I was watching the Bobster interview and they're talking about when he kickflip nose wheelies, nollie heel flips out at EMB, no one had been doing that. Like probably Henry had done something like that too. But like Henry, when I watch Henry, like that shit looks tech.
Yeah.
And Mike, I'm like, in hindsight, I'm like, oh, that shit was tech.
Yeah, Mike kind of has the style that makes it look a little more effortless, right? And Henry looks like he's charging, like, not, it's not one is better or the other, it's just different.
Yeah, it's a different approach to it. And like Henry, I'm like, it's like a mad scientist, like all the stuff, like, yeah, like Tim and Henry's video. I'm like, you can tell, like, this dude is scheming, like, he's got ideas. And then I felt like Mike was just like, I have an idea, maybe it'll work. And I think, like all of Henry Sanchez's stuff, I'm like, oh, I can't even comprehend doing any of this stuff. Not to say that I was like, I could comprehend doing like what Mike's doing.
Yeah.
This is like a long-winded way of like, Mike and Rick were always the dudes that I looked up to.
And Rick just added like almost like Gone style, where it's just like makes everything seem fun. Like he's like having a good time. Like that's what always appealed to me, where the dudes, like I was talking to Mike York a couple weeks ago and I was like, just these guys are always smiling and making it look like, because I think I read like something you had said that a lot of people say, it's like kids are always asking me how to go pro. And my answer is always like, dude, have fun first. You know, like you got to have fun with this. Like, don't worry so much about being like that guy or whatever.
Right.
And so a guy that I grew up with was Phil Shao, and he kind of was the guy that helped open the doors for me. And I remember him coming back from skating with Gons for the first time. And he was like, this is why he's the best. Everyone says he's the best, but this is why he's the best. Because that fucking guy showed up at a contest and everyone stopped and he made it look like fun. Like we were all trying and then all of a sudden Mark shows up and it just looks like a fun thing. And he's like, that's why he's the best. And I always held on to those type of skaters that are just like that feeling of just like, oh my God, fun. Like that's why we started this whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's that concept is so much easier to understand than like learning the building blocks to a certain trick. If someone can identify that you're having fun, they're going to latch on to whatever it is that's giving that fun. Like I remember last year I was skating at a park here in Tulsa, and this woman was like, hey, like I was done skating after an hour. So she came up to me. She's like, hey, I just want to tell you, like, you look like you were having so much fun that it's just really cool to watch you skateboarding. And I think that's also like, it's fun now because I'm just like, I want to get out and do that. And it's my outlet, because I don't have like a lot of like similar aged people that I skate with here. So I'm just like, yeah, it's great. And it really like landed well with me when she said that. And then it's so funny hearing that analogy and thinking back, like for the reason, like I'm grateful that video came about and I had that part and it was filmed by like these greats and everything. But the one part of the video that so many people talk about is they say they love how I smile after I do this line at Pier 17, like on the, it's like the pier blocks that have like the top on it that like Jake Johnson did the kickflip front tail side.
Like a nose blunt it.
Yeah. And I do a 360 kickflip at the end and I'm just smiling and everyone's like, I love that you're just like so happy there. And I'm like, well, that's what you want out of skating. That not even skating. That's what you want out of life. Like you want to be able to like find something that brings that natural smile, and like someone that has no idea what skateboarding is about can identify that. And that's like the beautiful thing. And that's why I think skating is rad for so many people, because they get that and they get those glimpses and you're just like, oh.
Mm. Yeah. I was thinking about it this morning too. I was drinking coffee and I'm like, so I'm thinking like, cause Raw was such, I mean, Raw literally was Raw. Like that's why it was called Raw. It was edited on a computer that had rendering, and like Sofa broke out into hives over this edit. Like it was stress city, because our computer was not made to edit videos.
Right.
So it was raw. Like, let's put it that way. But so you started, like, you know, you probably maybe filmed some other stuff for shops or earlier stuff, but like this is one of your earlier things. And you go from that through everything to you're jumping in a van, traveling around the country with a dude that has dollies and like high end equipment, right? So it's like that whole like, wow. And the evolution of maybe what you're seeing, like you're just a skater skating, but you're seeing the change in what's going on with the camera a lot.
Yeah.
They're getting this extreme, all of a sudden the extreme fisheye comes out and you're like, whoa, they can get real close to you. I got to be careful if I break the lens, kick out or whatever. And then wait, this guy's setting up for an hour to shoot. I need to skate. Like, I can't wait for this guy. Like all that stuff that goes into skating a video. I mean, to filming a video, it's like, were you always just like stoked because it was like almost like learning? You're just like, it's evolving. You're like, whoa, this is new and different. So I'm in. Or was there some parts that you're like, this is not like, I can't do this?
It would be the former. Like everything was just the evolution of what kind of equipment was used to capture it from like, I can't remember. I think Sava used it. A1, like a Canon.
Yeah, the Canon one, right?
Yeah, and to go all the way to like the total other end of the spectrum with whatever Ty's using, like even using the bubble that goes on helicopters, like to see that. There was never a time where I was just like, oh wow, this has taken so long. I just want to get after. I'm like, oh, I'm having the opportunity to participate in kind of like the exploration of skateboarding documentation.
Right.
So, and Ty is like on the cutting edge and it's just being like, cool, I have a seat at the table of innovation.
Right.
And sure, there's people that really hold dearly to sticking to the classics. And I have no problem with that either. But I think I like encountered this when we did Pop War and like, ran that program, like talking with Raymond, and he kind of refused to film unless it was filmed on a VX1. And I'm like, yeah, respect. I hear you on that. But there's so few people that had a VX1 at that time. And it was just more important for me on my personal journey and career to like be with someone who was excited to capture it and knew how to use the equipment that they're using. So like, I always enjoyed filming with Jason Hernandez because he used a VX2 or a VX2100 and like messed with the colors. So it looked really similar to like the VX1 that's just kind of like been this through line of like a standardized look and feel that you want for skating. But now like anytime Ty was sitting there and setting stuff up, I'm like, there definitely was that what you're saying, just like, oh, well, fuck, I better like come correct.
Right. Is that more pressure then? Like, it's almost like shooting film versus shooting digitally. Like, fuck, this guy doesn't want to do 3,000 sequences. He's wasting film, like that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, I think there was less. I think the most pressure in like documentation of like my skating is probably sequences on film.
Mm.
Like even with 16mm. Video, like I'm just like, I wasn't too stressed. I think when I filmed, I think the video was Duck Cinema with Daryl Grogan, that was a little different because I think the budget was way more limited than maybe doing something with Transworld. And the budget might have been like limited at Transworld too, but you have this perception growing up that, like, oh, well, it's Transworld. They've got money to pay for like the Bolex and the 16 mil, and like you're just going to put her on, so-and-so, like Chris Ortiz has like an account here, just drop it on there. They'll develop it. Like that was those things. But yeah, like all those horror stories are like not horror stories, but just like those tales of Danny Way. Like I think the 50 rolls of film to do the tray flip 5-0 invert. That was the biggest pressure.
Right.
But it would be kind of rad if like the VX1s held so strong. It would be so rad if like there were, and print is not dead, but it's like way more limited. It would be rad if there was like a contingency in skating that's just like, no, we're shooting film only, and sequences are never going to be video grabs. And that just, in my mind, I'm going on all these tangents. Probably half excited to talk to you and half excited to talk about skating. But I'm like, Big Brother was on this cutting edge when they're like, fuck film sequences, we're going to do video grabs. And then now fast forward to nowadays, and you're just like, the quality of video cameras make it so well that you could feasibly get away with just like having a video camera only and pulling grabs out and being like, yep, I did like a little post and it looks great for a photo too.
Yeah, especially every small.
Every photographer just cringed when I said that.
Yeah.
Just, fuck, Cairo, what the fuck? You're not like...
Oh, Joe Brooke just grabbed for his heart. Oh!
Yeah, and I'm like... It just, yeah, and I don't know, like talking about Ty, I'm like, I feel really like fortunate that I've been able to like work on projects with him, which is funny, like thinking like, I feel the same level of excitement and gratitude towards like Dan Wolf. And I'm like, Dan Wolf was like OG, where it's like, not to say that Dan Wolf's like only filming on a VX1, but I feel like he's like that guard, while like Ty is like, no, what is... Is there 80K? We're filming on 80K.
Yeah, just pushing.
It's gonna play in the Vegas Sphere after U2 is done. Like, this quality's so good that we're gonna see Tiago switch back tail the entire Vegas Sphere.
Yeah.
And there's a place for that. Like, it's like, I think there's a place for all that video content, especially because YouTube and all the other platforms can host it. So get in where you fit in, and that goes with like your approach to skating and what you choose to watch and what obstacles you choose to skate.
Oh yeah, it gets deep.
For your video parts in general, were you kind of hands off, like, these are the pros, let them do it? Or were you in there going like, I don't like this, I don't like that? Did you have a pick on the songs, or were the songs kind of put in there for you? Like, how did the process go for that?
I would say I was pretty hands off, because I felt really confident in everyone I had the fortune of filming with. And when it came to music, I think it was just like, hey, we would talk a lot or just listen to like the type of stuff that I listen to. And I never, aside from maybe, and like big hats off to Bagley and Louie, for Bag of Suck, not Bag of Suck, but Oververt. Skate with Skate to Guided by Voices. That's like the only song that I like truly was like, I want to skate to this song. And maybe like with The Reason and some other stuff, it was like, hey, here's like a list of songs. And maybe like Reel to Reel, I don't even think like I was never like, you hear these stories of just like skaters that are like, I need to skate to this song. And I'm like, well, I don't have a vision for like how Rob Welsh is going to skate in Fully Flared. I don't have a vision for like Beeble, but Ty has a vision for this entire package. And right. It's going to be right for his vision, and it's going to be wrong for other people's visions. But at the end of the day, he's the person in charge, or like John Holland's the person in charge, or you're the person in charge. It's like, if I have faith as a skater in like who I'm working on the project with, like, why am I in there micromanaging their life? Like, I do think that people have had great success doing that. I think Jamie Thomas is probably like really involved from beginning to end and has created like a massive legacy. But that was never my desire. I wanted to just be like, get in the van and skate, and honestly travel the entire world to go skate like the same four block that I could skate in Oakland, you know, and just like have the experiences. And then you're just like, cool, Anthony Clairville knows how to fucking get this.
Right.
And we're going to have a fucking dope time. And sure, Anthony films different than Jason Hernandez or Kyle Camarillo, but like, at no time was I like, yo, can I see that footage? And I've watched it. Like when I did Pop War, I watched it with Adam Crew, and like, he has a great vision, but I'm like, I can't get caught up in the minutiae of like what you did. And like, definitely during Fully Flared, I had to refilm stuff, cause Ty was like, no, it's not where I want it.
And
I know that was a challenge for some people, and I get it. Cause it's like, you don't want to get broke off. You don't want to do something that's like an NBD again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I just feel lucky that I got to film with people that I was like, they know how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, when you're dealing with those kind of people, that caliber, you're just, I mean, what they've already done and what you know they can do goes a long way. It's not like you just met some guy that said he films. You're like, this Ty Evans, this Dan Wolf. Like, they've got a pretty good reputation. So it's like, let them do their thing, I'll do my thing, and together. Was some of the time that you would see it for the first time, like at a premiere, would you like ever like see your part for the first time with people, or did you always see it like before it went to premiere?
Yeah, probably a mix. Like, I don't remember seeing my reel to reel part before it came out. And honestly, I don't remember seeing it when we were at, was it Slim's?
Was it Slim's? Yeah, I think so.
I don't remember seeing it there too, because Mickey had to save my ass from getting beat up by the bouncers. That's how drunk I got.
Yes.
Fully flared. I hadn't seen it until the premiere at UCLA, and that was fucking amazing.
Oh, wow.
I think Oververt I saw. I definitely didn't see The Reason beforehand.
Okay, rad.
I just have like a different relationship with it. I'm like, and kind of to like beat a dead horse even more. Like, you know, you're saying like, I got to film with these certain people. There's even like, there's a place for someone that's still learning how to film. Like, and I'm like, there's so many rad videos that come out every single day in this time. And there's a place for that video that looks like you're in high school and you're still editing from VCR to VCR, and you've got like some fucking chicken scratch artwork on there.
Mm.
There's a time and a place for that. And so I'm like, if someone's filming like that, like, let's do it for that. Like, but like, don't try to like marry poor filming skills with like high end editing or vice versa. Like, it just doesn't, just keep the common thread together. So like, if someone's like, yo, I'm starting this new video and I've never really filmed before, I'm like, cool. Like, you edit it still, so it's going to be all
good vibe. Sure.
I mean, I think that was like a big challenge with like 411 is like a lot of people's parts, like were filmed by like 40 people. So it was a little like, sometimes you'd be like, there's no like common thread here.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the Skate House. Seth Cheeks in the Closet, Pete Thompson, who was the roll call? That whole, there was a lot of people that, there's two stories, right?
There were a couple skate houses, but the one you're talking about is on South Van Ness, 16th South Van Ness, and
originally, Elias maybe.
Yeah, so like on our floor, it was Elias, Bingham, Simon Bingham, Mike Fortney, Vic Blue, that was from North Carolina, and Meredith Bogurski, they lived up front. Chris, who did art for Deluxe for like 20 years. Derek Snodgrass, Zach, like that was all the top floor. And the majority of those people were all NC heads, because my understanding is like the three stories used to be the bottom, or one of the stories was all these people from North Carolina that like kind of skated, didn't skate, but like all came from North Carolina. The place burnt down, got rebuilt, and Cricket and those guys on the first floor from North Carolina gave heads up. And Vic, who I think went to school with some of those people, was moving in. Meredith was dating Vic. Meredith knew Pete Thompson. And like, so it's just like this huge like network. And so we ended up moving on the top floor, and then the second floor became vacant or available. And Pete Thompson moved in there with Justin Strubing, Seth Cheeks from the back. Like, I built like his loft out for him.
Yeah.
And we had so many people that came through there. So many wild stories, like people living on our porch, people breaking into our house because like we were the third floor walk up, and you just buzz people in and kind of like, because it was Skate House, you're not going to sit there and wait to see who's going up 41 stairs. You just like buzz and go do your shit. And like one time, this hood ass dude, fucking big ass dude came in. I like, look out. We were like on the balcony. I think maybe me and Derek. We look into the kitchen. I'm like, yo, what the fuck's that? Who's that dude? He's like going through our shelving and shit.
Uh-huh.
Spoons and stuff. And I was like, open the door. I was like, yo, what the fuck? Basically, I had to chase the dude out. He like gets to like the landing that goes down to the front door. And then he like flipped the switch. He's like, yo, why are you guys yelling at me? I'm like, because you're in our house. Like, we ended up having to beat the dude down. And he's like, I'm going to call the cops on you. I'm like, what are you talking about? You broke into our house. I mean, he didn't break in because we let him in.
Right.
Someone let him in, but I'm just like, what the fuck? That house was wild. And you and Bowman lived there.
Did he?
On the second floor. Yeah. Like, in Harif Guzman, he lived like a block down.
Harif. I forgot about Harif.
And then Brian and Staba, they lived a block towards 17th or 18th on South Van Ness. And Chris Bear, that does used to work at Skate Mental and stuff.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, so many people live there, and then like it's in the melting pot, like 16th and Mission.
You're right by Delirium and Kilowatt, yeah, and all the bars.
You see like the rad stuff and the bad stuff. Like that documentary Black Tar Heroin came out, and you like saw people that were in there who had HIV, and you're like, oh, they shouldn't still be like on the streets doing what they're doing. We had like a couple, a pimp and like the woman living on, it was wild, dude. We saw some, I mean, it definitely is not desensitized, but you just like, yeah, life can get really raw, and it definitely set the stage for how I perceive like living in Portland or living here in Oklahoma, and just like the homelessness and houselessness and just drugs.
Right. We saw
skaters that like iconic skaters that I grew up on. I'm like, oh, they're having a bad one right now. It's a bad week. Like, I don't want to sit on the streets. And yeah, I didn't know what, you didn't know what to do. You're just like, fuck, I don't know.
Right. No, I know. And it like that seemed crazy. And then now seems like it's so much crazier. Like then didn't seem that bad compared to now, as far as like, especially drug use. Like yeah. I was like, cause we're building a little skate park on Market. I don't know if you know about this.
No.
Dude, insane. So the city right by the fountains. Like between 7th and 8th, like,
dude,
yeah.
Fucking round zero. Wow. You guys like, wow. Okay.
And it's going to be like a skate plaza, like not a skate park. Like they're building we just built a volcano yesterday. I'll send you some photos, but like there's some stuff in there. So anyway, I get down there at like 6:30 in the morning to meet the dudes, probably like 3 or 4 times a week before the sun's up. Cause I'm filming the whole thing, and this is so cliche, and I get mad at myself sometimes hearing myself say it, but there's no other way to describe it. It's the Walking Dead. Like these dudes are in super slow-mo and their backs are bent over and they're smoking shit off foil, which you know isn't weed. And it's just crazy. And I'm like, how can I just walk into this neighborhood and just point out all this stuff? How can I don't know the answer. I know it's a sensitive topic, but I just don't understand how a policeman can't just go down there and sit there for a half hour and arrest some people or something. I don't know, but it's really nuts, that neighborhood. And so sadly, I think the idea is bringing skaters there is going to help push that out. You know, we'll take whatever we can get, but yeah, so it's going to be interesting. You know, the obstacle at Silas's park, that's kind of like a long triangle that has like a bank up and then the curb down. So there's going to be one of those.
Is Austin building some of this?
Yeah, he's building the whole thing.
Hey.
Yeah. So there's a 55-foot long curb that we just put in, a volcano, and then like a 60-foot long, almost like China bank thing with marble ledges from Waller that are going to be placed in there. Yeah, it's going to be cool, dude.
What obstacle is going to get defecated on first?
Well, I think
China Banks is going to be like fucking mud smeared.
That's going to be everyone's pillow. I think that's going to be, because it's like if you're driving down Market, you look to the right and there's this wall, and on the other side of the wall is the China Bank thing. So that's where they're all going to be laying across smoking their shit, I bet. But what they're hoping for is enough skating and loudness and all that. Maybe it, but whatever happens with that, I feel like it just goes 2 blocks further, wherever. It's like,
yeah,
you're not getting rid of them, you're just moving them, right? But no, but this is going to be super cool. I think, yeah, like I said, I'll send you photos. It's probably going to be done in like 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah, I like for when Tyshawn got Skater of the Year,
mm-hmm.
still working at Adidas, I went there and I stayed at the Yotel. That's right on 6th and Market.
Yeah.
And I was like looking at pictures like the Yotel, that sounds cool. Like whatever. And uh-huh. I remember getting there during midday and it wasn't too wild. And then went to the party and came back at like 11 or 12, like didn't even like drink or anything. And I was like, cool, seen it. I'm out. And it was totally like The Walking Dead. And then I go back, I wake up super early in the mornings and I'm like, it's mind boggling to see that volume of humans fucked up on drugs and to, because like you see, like when you see someone in the Mission back in the day, or like I was in Denver a couple weeks ago and saw someone smoking crack or meth or whatever, and you see at the slow motion, if it's only like one or two people, you're like, well, that's wild. But if you see those actions with hundreds of people,
it's like a movie set.
It's so wild. Like that part, like City Hall is like, yo.
It is the epicenter.
Skate here, but now I'm like, cool. And you can skate here. Go for it. There, the city's hope is like, well, Twitter's out of here, or like whomever, everyone that was like trying to populate that. Cause that was, I feel like a decade or 15 yep. years ago, that was the strategy. Bring in .com to right here. Cause they're going to push people out. Like no one wants to like say it, but that was the ambition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, it's kind of like a really unsolvable dilemma.
Yeah, that's the thing. And like a lot of people, like my mom, for example, you watch the news, you don't live around here, and it just looks so bad. And it is kind of bad, but it looks way worse than it is. And she's like, aren't you scared? And the other day I was talking to her about it, and she's like, are you scared? Are you like, is it safe? Da, da, da. And I was like, Mom, it's really just sad. Like yeah. these guys can't catch me. Like they yeah. can't move very fast. They're not like threatening me. It's just sad what they're becoming. And then yeah. hearing about all these people that are dying because fentanyl is in these drugs that they don't even know. That is just like, I mean, I've lost people that sure. that's happened to. And that is where you keep getting reminded when you're out in the streets, like, oh, this is why that's happening. And it's still happening. And you're like, I don't know the answer, but something has to change. This can't continue. This is so bad. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So it's been real trip, especially coming off of the pandemic where you were kind of secluded already. And then right. you come out to the Wild West and you're like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not an irony, but like, in a way it's ironic that like that's ground zero for that high concentration of drug use.
Mm.
And skateboarding will thrive within the chaos, kind of like in any city. You're just like, yeah, we built this DIY in like a really sketchy part of town, or we did this. And it's just like, that is visually for like the tourist that comes to San Francisco, they see that area, they're like, oh my gosh. But like, there's this opportunity for skateboarding to build a plaza there. And the city's like, yeah, go ahead. Like, we'll look the other way on that, on an action like that cities typically are like, you can't skateboard here.
Right.
And like skateboarding is still thriving. Like it's like the act of skateboarding will always thrive in these areas where the common person is just like, I wouldn't want to be there. Or like, why are you there? It's like a beautiful thing.
It's really crazy. Yeah. yeah. Cause when we were in Baltimore, we went to the banks where they filmed The Wire.
Yeah, yeah, we skated there.
And I'm just like, we're not in a safe zone, are we?
That, like, that spot's like the mix. Yeah.
So that kind there, of like, stuff, like Thrasher's in Hunter's Point. It's the sketchiest zone of SF, yeah. but that's where the mag is. So yeah, you're the right artist. About that. Yeah. Were you pro on Supernaut or not till Mad Circle?
No, I wasn't pro on Supernaut.
So your first board was Mad pro. Circle, right?
Yeah, first pro board was Mad Circle. Like I was going to turn pro at Supernaut. And then, and you know, like it's been so long. In hindsight, I was just like, I wasn't clear on what my understanding of our agreements were.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't, the agreements weren't with like Ballard and Ted and Paul Sharp. It was more with our backer who was also our manufacturer. So like things were just a little unclear, and like I thought I was going to turn pro and like this was what's going to happen at this time. And then because those things didn't really pan out, instead of me talking through it like I would nowadays, I was just, and I probably already had these inklings like I wasn't going to, like I wanted to leave anyway. I've been so like, I wasn't rash about it, but I was just like, let's not do my board then. Like, I'm just going to jump ship. And okay. So then I ended up writing for Mad Circle, which unbeknownst to me was like the very end of like the, my understanding was like a 5-year agreement that Justin had with Giant Distribution. And I was on for 6 months, and then Giant, the agreement wasn't renewed, which was such a bummer. Cause like the team, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah. Such a legendary time too. Like in having Twist involved with the graphics. Who got on first, you or Rob?
Oh, Rob on the Mad Circle.
Yeah.
Was Rob for sure. Cause he was in the video, and I got on after the video dropped.
Okay.
And, I've kind of like made it, it's not a conscious effort, but like it's a recurring theme. Like I got on to Enjoy after Bag of Suck. I got on to, Mad Circle after Five Flavors, which were like these like breakout videos for those companies. Like the whole flow to me was like very special video for Mad Circle, but I don't think it had like the impact on the whole industry like Five Flavors did.
Right.
So Rob was on way before I was. Okay. Marcus Brown.
Yeah. Was Rob instrumental in, you were hanging out with Rob a lot at that time, and did, is that, how'd you get on Mad Circle? Was it Justin hit you up?
I'm not exactly sure how that all worked out. I mean, I was hanging out with Rob. I'd see Justin a few times. Jesse McMillan was doing all the graphics.
Okay.
Hanging out with Marcus. Synergy. No, I don't know. I kind of don't remember exactly how that came about. Blayback. I feel like Blayback shot like my Golden State Warrior, or not Warriors, but Golden State Wheels ad.
That's what I forgot about. Like, cause I was talking to Gerard like a month or two back, and he mentioned Blayback, and I was like, Blayback's always been one of my favorite photographers. Like he's really got his style, and it's just like, even his portraits are just so sick. Right. And I was like, my mouth dropped. I was like, I forgot he was with that. And like, I always tell him, I'm like, dude, you know what I love about you besides everything is you're always wearing an SF hat. And then he told me like his connection to SF and stuff. And I had totally forgot about Mad Circle. So
They have the fucking dream team. Like Jesse McMillan, such an amazing skater and such an amazing artist. Like he's the dude that unlocked that rail that like Miles Silvis just had the front crook on. Like he board slid
top of Mason.
Yeah. Jesse McMillan board slid that way back in the day. Brain fart, but I feel like Jesse McMillan rode for fun, right?
I don't know. Maybe.
I'm not sure, but like, yeah, like I think just like who I was hanging out with, that's how I got onto Mad Circle. And it might have been like Carl might have helped out on that, because Carl is one of the first people in San Francisco that I met when we did my first trip for a couple of weeks out to San Francisco. Like Carl asked me like if I wanted to get profile decks. And I was like, no, I'm on this company based out of Jacksonville, Florida called Rec. And buddy Jeff does it. And then it's so amazing because like our industry, as our all industries and bubbles that everyone lives in, it's so small. Cause like to end up being at Adidas all those years and Carl's at Adidas working. And I'm just like, it's just this full circle. And like, ideally we try to like take care of our community and like, just support one another. So I'm just like, it's wild. Like whenever I do reminisce that like these people and these relationships were created as a teenager. And it's like it's our security blanket where we're like, well, this is the space I want to be in. And I can't even imagine like reinvesting a similar amount of time, like in another space that is like no skateboarders have gone to, you know, like surfing, lots of skaters are there, biking, lots of skaters are there, snowboarding. It's like skateboarding. But to do something like I'm going to go into the IT gaming world, like to make a crazy stereotype or something, but to like build those same relationships in that world. I'm like, what? Like highly, I don't even know. I mean, maybe there's tons of skaters there too.
That's like Justin Gerard. He went into this like whole tech thing, like no education, nothing. And he's killing it. I'm like, dude, it's pretty impressive. I'm like, well, yeah. This is a whole other world. And you're just like, but I don't know, not having the skateboard, you know, every day when you go to work, it's still a job, but you're like, it's skateboarding. And there's like a passion that runs through you that you're like, I can overlook this and that because I still got this. And like, I'm fortunate to be the age that I'm at and still attached to it and all these things. Like there's so many pluses, but when you have a job like that, you're like, I just feel like there'd be so many easy triggers to say peace. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like not like a extreme crossroads by any means, but like, I'm kind of like milling that about in my head. Cause I just started, last week was like finishing up 4 weeks at my new job. And I work for Crocs, and it's like Crocs doesn't have a skateboarding program. There's no intention to be in skateboarding. And I'm like, oh, whoa. Like I work in footwear and it's awesome. I work with some friends that I know from Adidas skateboarding, and a lot of the people that I work with are really amazing people, but I'm just like, oh, this is like a new adventure, like being at a large organization that has no connection to skateboarding.
Right. But yeah. But are you still working from home, or are you in the field, or like how, what's your job?
No, it's like a marketing role.
Okay.
And beginning of next year, I will be, Trisha and I will be, Colorado natives or Colorado residents. Yeah,
man, you move like around.
Oh yeah. We move around so much. It's super wild. Like Portland is probably the longest I've lived anywhere. Like Trisha has friends that she remembers from like 2 or 3 years of age on the East Coast. And she's lived in a couple of places for a really long time until she met me. But yeah,
She's moved around a bunch too.
She's moved around a bunch now that we're together. Like we've been together for 13 years over 13. And like, yeah, it's just in my DNA. I'm like, oh, time to move to somewhere new. Like, I mean, this adventure in Tulsa, Oklahoma was probably her initiating it, but it's been fun. And we're like, it's just cool to have like these new experiences.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Colorado and, hopefully the twins are still skating and like all those videos are, they're having the shot battles. And no, I'm just joking. Like Denver's like going to be amazing. There's so
what
many.
What is it? 310. What's the name of it?
303.
Yeah. David Reyes. Hook up with Angel Ramirez again.
Yeah, dude.
Sick. Yeah, dude, Denver's sick. The only thing that I don't like about Denver is the first day I'm always nauseous. Like I don't acclimate to the elevation. Well, yeah. But I love that city. It's dope.
Yeah. So it'll be a cool new adventure. We'll be back in the mountains. Cause like when I met Trisha, she was living in Colorado. So now we're back out there.
I think your future is bright.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talking Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow. All of the episodes will always remain free, but if you would like to help support the show, you can do so at talkingschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like t-shirts, beanies, hats, and stickers. The website has an entire archive of all of the episodes, with extra photos and videos. Email us with any suggestions, comments, or ways that the show may have improved your life at talkingschmidt@gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature. A very special shout out goes to the executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
This is Talking Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Keep the wheels greased.